Comparison.
You don't
appreciate it until you lose it for, and it's not even that long.
I sit on the ground half the time anyway. Like, it actually might be a bigger punishment for me to just have to sit there.
Sitting on the back is always fun.
That kind of day.
Yep.
What do you mean with
energy?
Yeah.
Energize with the
cloud. Yeah, you put that on the table.
It's switching over there. They're also on your phone. You can get on your phone. Zoom, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, great. We'll start with these classes about October 7th and this is the first one we have, and it's a doozy. So we mentioned last night a few references to October 7th as a key knowledge. Obviously, it's not at the same level as the Holocaust, but in a sense, it is. I think when Rav Shiva, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, used to say that Holocaust is unique, that like, every Jew on the planet knew they were Jew in the Holocaust. And in that sense, he said it deserved its own holiday. There's no reason we celebrate like, Tisha B'Av, we commemorate the Holocaust either in Tisha B'Av or serve the table. They didn't make their own day, but he said it really does warrant its own day. Just we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to own day. There's Yom HaShoah in a secular sense, but there's Yom HaShoah in the religious perspective. He didn't like the way they did it, Yom HaShoah, because he said Yom HaShoah is made on the day of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. The reason he didn't like that is because it implies, and this is what the original Zionist, their mission statement, so to speak, that Jew needs to fight back. That's what we need, Tzahal. We need Israel. We can't fight back, which is a valiant, very worthy idea, but the idea that implies is that if you don't fight back, the reason that is because the original founders of Israel used to be called perfect, which is a controversial book. It says that there's a historical account that Jews in Europe, they didn't want the Jews in Europe to come to Israel because they had a galut mentality, they had an exile mentality. We didn't fight back. That implies that, Yom HaShoah, he said, imply, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg said, imply that those Jews don't fight back. There were statements that were quoted by the original Zionist. They said, a Jew in Europe is putting cows in Israel. No, they looked down upon Jews who didn't fight. They went like sheep to the slaughter. And that was the message. Yes, that was the message, because if you look at the Yom HaShoah, it's Yom HaShoah Gvura. It's called Yom HaShoah Gvura. So only specifically those who fought back. Those who didn't fight back, it wasn't commemorating. Saying that's everyone feels this way, but it's definitely a sentiment. So Yom HaShoah, despite all that, the way it's celebrated, he didn't like it, but he said it needs its own day, because the day that affected the whole Jewish people. October 7th, the same thing. October 7th, every Jew in the world finds positive, something negative, something. They were pro-Jewish, some Jews were anti-Jewish, and they Semitic, as they say, which anti-Semitic, but every Jew was affected by October 7th. It was just an impact that was beyond just the news. And I think that's why Tisha B'Av is so important. Tisha B'Av, October 7th is different than prayers up to Tisha B'Av. The day in which we recognize all the calamities that happened to Jewish people are a result of the Chorma Semitic, the result of the eggs of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It's a teaching important lesson, which we should have known until now, is that even though we had land of Israel, even though we were residing in Israel, so most of the Jews in the world are living, despite that, still in exile. But we're not here yet. We're not home yet. We still have one way to go, because think about it, we're surrounded by at least seven enemies wanting our destruction. At least seven. There's more than that. The evident enemies are actively seeking our destruction right now. Jews cannot reside in the north or the south. It's unprecedented. Jews can't live in their own country. To say that we're out of exile is delusional. We're still in exile. We've come a long way. Those who say that the city of Israel has nothing to do with redemption, I think, are missing them, losing their minds. I mean, it's obvious that the miracles we gave us land of Israel are part of God's plan. The problem is that we're not there yet. So we have to realize that we have to have an attitude. We have to learn from what's going on. We have to say, what will we learn? From what's happening, we can affect our lives in such a way that will bring us closer to Mashiach. And there are a lot of buzzwords going around. Avat chinam. Chinam, we'll see chinam, the word chinam, part of the problem. Chinam is not the sinat, it's the chinam. Chinam is the issue. So to say avat chinam, there are some problems. I just think they're missing the point. What is that avat chinam? Is understanding what is lashon hara? What are these buzzwords that people use? Understand the root of the issue. We can deal with the problem, not just band-aids on a serious issue. We have to see today. This is the Palestinian issue. No solution. Everyone has a two-state solution, one-state solution, six-state solution. There's no solution. Every solution has fatal flaws. Literally, it's just fatal flaws. It's destructive flaws. It's terrible, terrible, terrible situation where we have no solution. Anyone who thinks we have a solution is just hardwiring themselves. There is no solution. Why that put us in this situation? What can we do? We can't just not do anything. We have to do something. There's no obvious solution. So, I think that's the goal of this Tisha B'Av, and that's what we're going to try to do in this class. Try to understand what is the situation, what the problems are. Because we have to look at everything in historical context. Realize that Tisha B'Av is not just a day that we commemorate bad things. Tisha B'Av is a day in which we the root of our issue. If we look at the destruction based on this without looking at the sin of the spy, we're fooling ourselves. We're missing out on what the source So the problem is, look at this, and the spies, so they say, what happened? What wrong was the Jewish people that caused all these terrible calamities? Because the Medrash says that we cried for nothing. Again, the word chinam is, obviously chinam is more, chinam, bichia. And that crying is a problem. I don't for chinam. You know what I mean? It's free. Without investment, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean baseless. It means without any investment, you're not invested in a situation. Ultimately, it's about relationship, investment in relationship. When you cry and you hate that investment, you ought to hate other Jews. 100% a lot of hate other Jews. But chinam is a problem. The problem is without investment in relationship, without caring, without having meaningful meaning to you in a deep way. So you look at the source of Tisha B'Av, which is the miracle of the spies. Yeah, it has to do with Eretz Yisrael, with the land of Israel. It's to do with Lashon Hara, because they spoke Lashon Hara about the land, which is itself crazy. What does it mean they spoke Lashon Hara about the land? So the verse says, if you speak Lashon Hara about sticks and stones, Benjamin speaks Lashon Hara about sticks and stones. What does it mean speaks Lashon Hara? So you see the stones are bad, the stones, the land of Israel eats its inhabitants, or Chalat Hashver. Obviously, we have to understand what happened in the source of this day, and how it applies to why it ended up with the Mason Migdal, destruction of the temple, and us going to exile. How it applies to our situation today, because the situation today is obviously not a coincidence. Like I said, the miracles that happened for Jewish people to get the land of Israel, to stay in the land of Israel, is outstanding, just out of this world. And the situation when it being impossible has to be from God. It has to be this reason. We have to try to understand the reason. I think the only way to understand it is to go back in history, see the source of the problem, understand how to solve those problems based on this world. That's our goal today. One thing that we explain is that Shabbat is the day of looking left to the day of national failure. It's a day we failed as a nation. I think that's something that we overlook. It's really we try to find solutions. We have to focus on the fact that it's a day of failure. The reason that's important, look at this whole season, it's all about failure. Jewish people left Mount Sinai on Shavuot. Now, if you look at source on the last, second to last source, someone read that, source is quoting a Medrash. So this is what the says based on Medrash, that it says the Yisu from Har Sinai, they left from Har Sinai. It says that the Medrash is B'dayik. It looks in the verse and says, we left Mount Sinai like a child came from school. So what does that mean, fleeing from school? It means that at least child went from school. It's a child, first of all. A child doesn't have an ability to relate. They have ability to feel. A relationship comes with puberty. That's why we celebrate Bat Mitzvah, Bat Mitzvah. Mitzvah means not because they become an adult. No, they're not an adult. They're not an adult until they're 20. At least these children of 20. Who knows if they're really adult? 13, 12. When the guy gets up and says, son, you've now become a man.
I think so.
You know, it's like it's absurd. It's like, you're not a man. What happens is you hit puberty. I speak that way. Puberty means you have the ability, first in your life, having the ability to connect to people. But Tino doesn't have that ability to connect. Kids run away from school. They don't care. It's like they disconnect from everything. That's just what they want to disconnect. Why is when God revealed himself to them, had revelation, they were freaked out. They were scared out of their mind. They say, Moses said, this is great, but this is fantastic. You get to meet God. We don't want to meet God. We're not just going to insane. They heard two of the Ten Commandments. They're like, we're finished. We're done. Can't handle it. They got disconnected from God, not connected to God. They got a need to raise the mountain over there in their line. Or somebody keep the Torah. Rabbi, the rest of the Jewish people were free. They weren't obligated in the Torah because they were forced. So it wasn't a Purim. They were obligated because they accepted it willingly on Purim. But then they were freaked out. They were like, we don't want this. They basically didn't accept the Torah. I had to force them. When they ran away from Har Sinai, it led to easily. You can see why it led to the golden calf. It's like they were freaked out from God. They needed a way to relate to God through an intermediary. Moses was the intermediary. Moses wasn't around, so they freaked out. They're like, we don't want to relate to God directly, so we need something else. They made this idol. So they had to worship idol. That's fine. They worship here that they needed some way to connect to God. It was outside. They defined how they connected to God, but they needed a way to connect to God that was not direct, not indirect. That's what the ego represented. So that was an incredible national failure. The Jewish failed terribly. So that Shabbat Sabbatamas starts off this whole period of national failure. The Shabbat is continues that failure. Look afterwards. We have Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a day of failure. The day that Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge and evil. That's just a failure. It's an epic failure. They failed. The whole world failed because of them. The whole world was affected. The evil came into the world. It was just a complete failure. And that we celebrate Rosh Hashanah. Kippur, if you think about it, well, Tom Gadai is actually right after Rosh Hashanah. Tom Gadai is the day of the Ram says, I think I have here. Yeah, if you look at the verse number 3, this is Torah. Yes. 5-2. Read that?
The third of Tishrei. This is the day on which Gedaliah ben Ahikam was slain. The ember of Yisrael that remained was extinguished, causing their exile to become.
You see that this source, the Ram telling us, the amazing thing he's telling us, the Jewish people had a chance to survive, a chance to rebuild Israel. And somebody dies a day in which we was finally on the coffin. That's it. That was it. So if you don't want to source, you don't have one. It's on the website. It's on the home. It was epic fail. Basically, the failure on the coffin. No hope anymore. It's all what happened on. So then Yom Kippur is a day in which we tell God we failed. We basically losers. We do everything wrong. We're sinners. Why is this failure such a theme in the summer year. And why is it so important? So, in Adam and Rachel, you see that Adam and Eve, they sin in the Garden of Eden, they fail in the Garden of Eden, but that happened on the sixth day of creation, it happened on after creation. People make a mistake. I mean, part of the creation, that means Adam and Eve were part of the creation of the world. They put into the DNA of the world in 6 days. Put in the 6 day of creation, they put in the DNA of the world, failure. Part of our lives, part of I think there's two reasons why failure is think failure is our natural instinct is to think failure is when we have to avoid. Failure, really, think about it, it's like we can't be a robot. We're shacked with human beings, means that we're fallible. We fail. Part of the nature of being human being, that's what Adam basically told you. He failed because it was bad. He failed because he showed us that's what being human being goes about. It's failure. Mullig, on the other hand, believes those are our tribal enemies believe that the world should be people should be perfect. It's German ingenuity. German or the Nazis were considered to be Monday Mullig. They were into perfection. Everything has to be run by robotic. It's robotic. The mentality is robotic. It's like everything has to be Nazis. Everything has to be squeaky clean. They kill people very, very methodically. Everything has to be perfect. And that's Mullig believe exactly that. Mullig believe has to be perfect. The imperfection of the world shows God doesn't care. So that's what they said. God cared. He would make things perfect. He may make the world perfect. There's a lot of waste in the world. An example we give was chlorophyll. We explain that chlorophyll it means the plant absorbs all the sunlight for its nutrient, but it rejects green. That's why the grass looks green. We showed a scientific report out of Amsterdam, Holland, basically the university that showed that the imperfections in the world were shown by this phenomenon. Chlorophyll. So it should have, if it's perfect, it should have absorbed all light. Waste light. What would happen if it was absorbed by the plant? Anyone see if that plant? I mean, what was the color of the
black?
So molecule is, well, it should be black. Well, should be black because it should be perfect. It should be from above. Bilam was shot down that the God, when he created, he looks for a child, being born. He looks for the sperm that impregnates the mother of a tzaddik. So Bilam was like, that's crazy. Waste. Why is only one sperm used when there are a thousand available? So it's just waste. It's basically waste all the sperm. So he says he came blind after that. Molech was the rabbi of the Molech. Bilam believed also that God gets angry millisecond a day, and he's able to take advantage of that and curse anyone who wanted to close. So Bilam basically believed that God is not perfect. There's 1 second that he's not perfect. That means he's totally not perfect. He totally doesn't care. If he cared, he would care for every second. He wouldn't care for one second go by without caring. In fact, God, he could take advantage of that second. Shows you that God doesn't care. Some of his perspective, basically perfection means God cares. The fact that God is not perfect and the world's not perfect, that God doesn't care. So on the other hand, the Torah's teaching us is that life is about still about mistakes. There's two reasons why life is about mistakes. One is because you can't become yourself as an individual. You can't become a human being without making mistakes. Humans are about making mistakes, about mistakes. But mistakes is what creates us, makes us people. Our reaction to mistakes is what like the Pasuk in Mishlei says, seven people tzaddik become. A tzaddik falls seven times and then gets up again. Tzaddik is someone who creates himself, becomes a unique individual. He becomes a unique, special individual. He does the mistakes. He makes mistakes. You come back from the break. Anyone who was very successful, they made more mistakes than people want. That's what it comes down to. Mistakes, how you act to mistakes, how you respond to mistakes, how you learn from mistakes, how you become yourself, how you accomplish it. The second reason, which is more important, the purpose of becoming a unique individual is relationships. Relationships are built on mistakes. And the reason is very deep concept. And I'm going to have this in book. I'll show you a paper.
What is the significance of the perpetrator being a serpent?
He's just talking about the Garden of Eden, the snake was the one who was Adam and Eve to sin.
If we reflect upon the associations we make with reptiles, a serpent is a fitting antagonist in the Garden of Eden story. Reptiles are cold-blooded animals, both figuratively and literally. Unlike mammals, they generally do not nurture their offspring. They lay eggs and then leave the young creatures to fend for themselves. While they obviously do not choose their demeanor and only behave according to their evolutionary constitution, the reptile has come to symbolize a creature that is heartless, devoid, and devious and manipulative. Sorry, I already dehydrated. Willing to take advantage of every vulnerability and weakness it senses in its next unsuspecting victim.
Vulnerability is what creates relationship and destroys relationship. Someone takes advantage of someone's vulnerability, that's exactly where the relationship breaks down. It's basically that's what any relationship that breaks down is a person being so vulnerable to someone. The definition of relationship is based on making so vulnerable someone else and trusting them. If they get taken advantage of, then that's evil. The definition of evil is when they're so vulnerable and you take advantage of the vulnerability and hurt them. That's exactly why mistakes are so important to relationships. Because when you make mistakes, you're vulnerable. You show your human side, your humanity. That question question is, how do you react to it? How do you respond? Respond to vulnerability. So if you respond by attacking the person, that's what's definition of evil. If you respond by being nice to the person and mind to the person and realizing that vulnerability is what makes you closer to them, that's the definition of good. And that's really what we look at Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, when they spoke Lashon Hara about the land, and they spoke Lashon Hara about the Medrash says the reason is because they wanted to retain this position of power. The spies who had powerful positions in Israel. They wanted to manipulate the Jewish people. They were vulnerable. At the time when they come back to Israel, they had the ability to tell them, we can defeat the people in Israel and Canaan, because God can help us. But they said, Jewish people are now vulnerable. They look at themselves as weak. We're going to take advantage of them and show them they can't do it, because that way we'll stay in the desert and we'll retain our positions of power. Basically, they were looking, speaking, when they spoke Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara doesn't mean anything evil about people. Lashon Hara was explained to me, literally, Lashon Ra means speaking, that's bad speech. Lashon Ra is bad speech. Lashon Hara means the language of evil, means to manipulate someone, try to take care of advantage of the vulnerability, make you think the way you want to be, basically manipulating someone else to think the way you want them, taking advantage of the vulnerability. That's what language of evil. The language of evil was spoken first by the snake in Bavani. The language of evil that he spoke was trying to take advantage of the vulnerabilities of the human being that are naturally vulnerable because of like it says in by the floods, Bishikam Hubas, we're just flesh. It makes us very vulnerable. We're not people. We're made of armor. We're not robots. We made of flesh. Vulnerability makes us susceptible to and vulnerable to mistakes of the world. Want to take advantage. Want to kill. That's really the definition of between good and evil. The Lashon Hara, the language of evil. And then we have Chinam. Same idea. Chinam is when you hate someone. Sense that Chinam is free, means free from commitment, free from responsibility, free from any desire of connection. That's really what vulnerability is about. Vulnerability, when you're vulnerable, when you measure someone's vulnerability, you value them. You say you're valuable. You mean something to you, man. And Chinam means free, means it's not valuable. Doesn't care about the person. If you look at source number one, about the spy, you want to read that?
The wicked spy is and saying the word FS, nevertheless. People that draw on the land of fear, which signifies something negative and beyond humility, something impossible to achieve under any circumstances. The spies told Moses, it's impossible to fight against the people, because they are fear. The cities are fortified and very great, and moreover, we saw the children. Right.
See, the spies, what they did was they said that impossible. Well, impossible means that you can't accomplish it. You can't accomplish anything. This is what the idea of vulnerability is. They took advantage of him and said you can't do it. You're vulnerable. You can't accomplish it. You're not able to become yourself. You're not able to achieve. You're not able to. You have all the flaws. You can't do anything. They took advantage of the fact that they were weak. They were not able to basically afraid. Afraid of consequences of going to Israel. And they took advantage of them. A bit told them to pass. That was one thing. My mind says, the only thing they're wrong. They didn't make anything else wrong. They just said, so you guys are losers. You're going to fail. You're not going to succeed. That's the idea of being advantage of someone else. Moshe Rabbeinu says that said, where is Moshe's Torah? Where's Moshe's Torah before Moshe? Where, the words they use when he was B'shegam, the word B'shegam, and which means and also people are weak, are meat of flesh. When God described why he's going to destroy the world, it says that they're made of flesh. So it says Moshe was hinting that verse. Moshe represented the idea of vulnerability. That's why in this week's parasha, in Parsha's Varm, we just read, Moshe Rabbeinu starts off the book that, which he reveals to the Jewish people. He basically spoke to Jewish people and tells them opinions. Book of Tochu, book of Tochu means admonition. What Moshe Rabbeinu did, admonished Jews, two ways to look at admonition on Friday. One way to look at criticizing, you tell them how bad they are. You tell them that they failed and how terrible they are. And that, I think this is the crux of the issue. We look at Tochu, the way Tochu is explained, admonition is explained, is criticizing someone. So people don't respond well to criticism. It's really hard to understand. Why did Moshe do the last day of his death, of his life, last days of his life, criticize? He spends the whole book criticizing Jews. Why does he do that? He's like an old, cranky old man doing that. If you look at the Rambam, look at the last Rambam.
When one person wrongs another, the latter should not remain silent. Rather, he's commanded to make the matter known and ask him, why did you do this to me? Why did you wrong me regarding this matter? As it states, you shall surely admonish your
colleague. This is the Rambam says is the mitzvah. Mitzvah is to tell someone else we did something wrong. Why is that so important? You know, they say, the pop psychologists say, never go to bed angry with you. You always, before you go to sleep, you should apologize. But well is much longer. Go to sleep that way. I'm not saying, well, should you do that? Can't do that. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die. He's criticizing. Not because he's criticizing. Rambam says, "Tocha means, oh, Jewish people, I care about you. I love you. I don't want to go to bed angry. I don't want to go to sleep, die while I still have grudges again. I want to make things good. I want to tell you what, not just what you did wrong. I'm telling you what you hurt me. You hurt my feelings of the big aspect of the sixth parasha. So he said, how can I judge you alone? Jewish people responded, right? That's as judges. And Rambam Moshe said, I'm very hurt by that. You should have told me, Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't want to lose you. We love you. We want you to judge us because even though it's impossible, we still want you to judge us because you care about it. So you kill yourself over the Torah. You pain yourself over the Torah. It matters to you. It's something that you care about. How can we have someone else replace you? It's a possible replace. Even though we know it's not possible. One person can judge the whole nation. You should have wanted. You should have cared about me. You should have said, I don't want you to go, Moshe. We want to do whatever we can to keep you as our leader. And you said, well, now I can take advantage of the situation because there's going to be lesser people who are more susceptible to bribery, and I can bribe them and win 4K. That's a Jewish response. So Moshe Rabbeinu was hurt and pained by Jewish people's response. They didn't care about it. So Moshe Rabbeinu is doing Moshe Rabbeinu before he dies. Not just yelling at them, telling them, you hurt my feelings. And I want to make up with you. I want to be able to go to bed in a way that we're on good terms. To talk to a person, talk Ram learns this understand in the context of loving your neighbor as yourself. It's exactly the opposite of sinachim. Sinachim means you're not invested in the relationship, therefore you hate the person, you don't care about the person. Avas, chinam is not the point. Avas, after Hashem alchemach, loving your neighbor as yourself. Loving your neighbor as yourself means you look at someone else and say, this person is, I care about this person. It's like I'm supposed to be vulnerable in order to fail, in order to make myself as a person. I need vulnerability to make relationships. And that's what Moshe saying, you hurt my feelings, means I'm vulnerable. I'm not just a robot. I'm not just a person who comes from Mount Sinai. I give you robotically give you the Torah. It's something that's supposed to come from a human being. That's the favorite the book of Dvarim tells us. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the book of Dvarim from God. It was from Moshe. Moshe was telling you that the Torah is supposed to be personal. It's supposed to be a relationship, something you care about, something that matters, something that's a part of your life, like a way that it's emotional aspects of your life are the main part, not just the intellectual robotic part that has to do with information, with love and care, and that's what it's about. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. The reason why Torah has to be communicated through a human being is because it can't come from God. God, the problem with Shavuos is not just that they were freaked out by God. I realized getting Torah straight from God is ruins the whole Torah because basically it's a Torah which is information. It's intimidation. It's basically telling people how bad they are. How you have to be admonished. The difference between tocha, the right way to tocha, the wrong way, is the difference between good and evil. Literally good and evil. If you admonish someone, you tell them how bad they are, criticize them. Anyone who's a parent knows it doesn't work. When a kid comes older, it doesn't work because you just criticize them for nothing. You don't realize that you don't care about me. You just didn't criticize me, making me feel like a loser. I don't want to feel like a loser. I want to feel like a person. I want to feel like one who's independent, who's able to accomplish, able to succeed. You just criticize me. I'm not going to even do that. It's Moshe hitting the rock and speaking to the rock. So Moshe didn't put land of Israel. He hits the rock. I'm trying to force things. I'm trying to force the rock. Water. And therefore, the Jewish people learn from that. That forcing is what we do. It's basically in a way that's an impersonal. It's basically in a way criticizes and hurts and takes advantage of vulnerability. That said, so you should have spoken to the rock. Spoken to the rock means you're able to communicate. You're able to say to someone. You're a person. You're a human being on your own. You're so deserving of accomplishment and success on your own. And I'm going to look at your vulnerability and say, I'm not going to criticize you. I'm going to look at you and say, how can I build you up? How can I make you better? How can I make you into a person of success? Difference between tocha. One way, which is the way everyone does tocha nowadays. That's why Chazini says we can't give admonition today. We can't give tocha. We know how to do it. The way to do it is not to criticize someone. The way to do it is a way that shows you love them and you care about them and you want to make up with that. The Rambam says that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. The whole thing with the Rambam is Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes people not to criticize them, but telling them, I want to tell you what hurt me. I want to tell you what was hurtful to me so that we can make up with it. We can make the relationship better. And I think that's when things are bad, what we tend to do is respond to failure by giving up. That's the problem with the spies. The spies will. It's impossible. So they just said, we can't do it. We can't go there. Yitzhara, evil inclination, basically is a snake. He tells us two things. He tells us we don't have to do something. Whatever we want to do, we'll go to gym. You don't have to go. We have to go. You're fine. Or he said, we have to go. Then he tells us, you can't do it. There's two, Vilna Gaon says there's two bullies. They're both taking advantage of vulnerability. One says, you can't do it. It's not possible. You do whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter what you want to do. Torah, you want to make you want to do 50 push-ups today. Can't do it. Impossible. Can't do it. That's what the spy said to the people. It's impossible. You can't do it. One, he says, you don't have to. You don't have to. You're not obligated. The thing you can't do is when things are bad. That's what the evil tells us. Tells us we have to give up, stop the struggle, hope, and you become self, and then you don't value relationships or things that you have. That evil is destruction. That's the destruction of the spies. That's the destruction every time, every korban that we have is due to that. If things are good, we take people granted, become selfish, also evaluate what we have, and we have the struggle. Either way, the good things are bad. This is the theme of what happened. All the times we fail, basically, the chet ego was that. I mean, things difficult were bad. Basically, so we don't have to do it because we don't have to do what we're supposed to do. We ended up becoming more selfish and the void of relationship with God and becoming completely self-absorbed. And that's the difference between success and that. You look at life in terms of relationship, you look at life in terms of caring, loving, is looking at vulnerability as opportunity for relationship, then you've gotten the message of the failure that we have in our soul. And that's Gedalia, same thing. So Gedalia was Gedalia basically didn't want to hear Lashon Hara. Hear Lashon Hara about was a rebel trying to the government because they didn't trust the Roman. I'm sorry, the Babylonians. They basically said the Babylonians put up master in puppet governor in power. We have to get rid of them because rebellion has to go on. They trade vulnerability. Gedalia and the men wanted to make peace and advantage of it over him and kill or the idea of Gedalia saying we had one last chance to survive, one last chance. And instead we squandered it. We squandered it because we didn't value what we had. We didn't look at what we had. We said this is our last chance. We're gonna lose everything. And that's exactly the story of the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed. Gemara says that the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa restored the Yerushalayim. So the story, famous story, has a guy who was invited to a wedding. He invited his own person, right? The Bar Kamsa said Kamsa was his friend, Bar Kamsa was an enemy. Say Bar Kamsa was the son of the friend. Bar Kamsa. So he invited the son of the friend by accident, the evil guy. Like, well, the guy was obviously an evil guy because if you look at the story, he is telling the Jewish people, telling the Jewish people. The story basically had this guy thrown out of the wedding, and then he takes revenge, and he believes that the sages were there, didn't do anything to stop him from being embarrassed in public. He advised the Roman to give the Jewish people a sacrifice, and he puts a blemish in the Jewish people's side that they don't want to bring the sacrifice. And then the Romans, there's a sign of rebellion, and they end up destroying the temple. There's two many people think the story is about Lashon Hara, or Sidus Chinos. They treated the guy badly. So the truth is that the guy should have been treated badly. That was an evil guy. The problem with that learning that Gemara that way is that it ignores blatant fact about the story. That basically, the guy should have been hated. The guy was a terrible guy, and there's no reason why they should have been mercy on him, and they treat him exactly the way they're treating him. If you look at the Gemara, though, there's two different parts of the Gemara that are very telling. I'm going to read number second and third.
Well, Yochanan said, what is the meaning of that which is written? Happy is the man here, but he who hardens his heart shall fall. Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamsa.
And Rabbi Yochanan says at the end of the story, I mean, that also.
The excessive humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Kola destroyed our temple, burned our sanctuary, exiled of our land.
There's two problems, two famous one that sandwiched the story. First one says, Rabbi Yochanan said that this story is going to teach us. Has to be scarier for all the time. What does that do with the story? The end of the story says the humility, excessive humility of Yochanan Zechariah ben Avkila destroyed the temple, burned the sanctuary, and exiled us from the land. So what's up, Zechariah ben Avkila? So Zechariah ben Avkila was the rabbi. Who's blaming the rabbi? Rabbi at the end of the story basically says they said to him, they brought him a question. They brought him a shiloh. They said to him, what should we do? We have this sacrifice that has a movement. It has a blemish. We can't bring it as a sacrifice according to the regular law. But the fact is, if we don't bring it as a sacrifice, Romans are going to look at that as an insult, and they're going to destroy it. The question is, what do we do? Do we bring it as a sacrifice? Anyway, or do we say we don't? The rabbi said we don't bring it because he said we're going to think that you bring sacrifice with blemishes. We don't want that. It's like idiotic, classic, crazy story about caring about details without looking at the big picture. This guy was worried that people are going to bring sacrifice with blemishes. But if you don't bring the sacrifice and just say to hell with this rule, the Romans are going to destroy us. We're going to have to make a temple to bring sacrifice to bring the whole like looking at things from a very narrow perspective. You don't look far short trees. You look at the perspective. You don't bring the sacrifice. The Romans are going to destroy it. They're not going to be sacrificed to worry about blemishes anymore. What do you worry about blemishes? So his excessive humility says, because the reason, the problem with him is that he didn't look at the situation and say, wow, we might actually lose the temple. He took the temple for granted. He just said, I'm not going to lose the temple. That's a ridiculous. That's not a possibility. So basically, because of the fact he wasn't worried that maybe he's going to lose what he had. And then he basically looked in a narrow fashion. And this is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan says at the beginning. You have to be scared all the time. What do you mean scared all the time? Anxiety all the time? Has it been anxiety all the time? You have to worry. If you care about something, you care about your relationship. The relationship matters to you. You care about someone. You're worried about them. You're not anxious. You're not crazy. You just worried. You might lose it. You might lose what you have. You treasure something. So it matters to you. So if you have $1 million in the bank, you're not going to say, I'll just let it. I'll just put it into to Dogecoin. You know, you're not going to do that. You're not going to throw your money away. You're going to care about your money. You same thing with your relationships. You're not going to just throw things away. You have to be careful about your relationships and value them. That you have to be worried about losing, and that's what would be exactly what Zechariah ben Avkila did not do. He didn't worry about his relationship with God. He didn't really worry about the fact he's going to lose faith. He didn't value relationships. You don't value relationships, everything's going to go go to Pana. That's the problem with all these stories. Same idea. Basically, Gedalia didn't worry about the bigger picture, and because of that, he does minor thing like Lashon Hara, which is a minor thing in the story. It's just worry about technical detail. You should be worried about the whole thing. This, I think, is the problem. We have to look at today. Avela out. We explain all the time. Avela has to do with reaction to failure. How do we react to failure? React to failure by saying things stink. Like we said before, you know, we should give up. It's impossible. Okay, do anything about it. We look at failure and say, this is the ability for us to become better people. This is the ability for us to improve our relationship, to show that we're vulnerable to God and show to God that we pray to God because we care about our relationship with God. And God matters to us. This, I think, is what our veil teaches us today. We are now acutely aware that we are vulnerable. We're acutely aware that the individual is in jeopardy. We really could lose the individual. We have enemies all around us, wanting to kill us, wanting to destroy. We can't respond by that just by saying, oh, we have no problem. We'll defeat them. It's no big deal. It is a big deal. Look what happened on October 7th. We are vulnerable. It's terrible. It shows us how vulnerable we are. And our response to vulnerability shouldn't be to give up. Our response to vulnerability shouldn't be we can handle it. Our response to vulnerability October 7th should be we're really vulnerable. We're really in trouble. We need God. We need to turn to God. We need to turn to our relationship. We need to pray to God. We need to connect to God. We need to say to God, help us. We need help. We're not incapable of doing this on our own. We need help. We need you to guard us and take care of us. Without you, we have nothing. Without a relationship with you, we have nothing. Without you taking care of us, we have nothing. That's, I think, the only way we could respond to something and be successful. Because any other way is either too haughty or it's too humble. We can't respond with it's impossible. We can't win. There's no solution to the problem. We can't do that. We have to realize that we have to have hope. We have to realize that having hope doesn't mean being haughty. Doesn't mean that. Oh, we have the IDF. That's exactly what I think they did wrong in the Six Day War. Six Day War. The connection to God was palpable in the air in Israel. I mean, basically, everyone realized it was a miracle. It was impossible. We were surrounded by enemies at that time too. In 6 days, we not only defended ourselves, we doubled the land of Israel. As the land of Israel, we destroyed all their armies. We destroyed the entire Air Force, the Jishim Air Force. It was a miracle. 2 weeks later, the slogan in Israel was "Kol Kavod Tzahal." Great, way to go, Tzahal. It's not the response we should have. The response should not be we're so powerful, we're successful in everything we do. Look at Tzahal and say it's a miracle. God saved us, and we thank God we have Tzahal. We have to realize that it's God that saved us. We need to turn to God. Everything, every success and failure, we have to open up our vulnerability. Realize that we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable. And sometimes God sends a terrible thing for us to realize that we're vulnerable. Response can't be, Yom Kippur response is not I give up. Yom Kippur response is not saying I'm bad, which I think most people do think about Yom Kippur response is I love you, God. I care about you, God. Even though I messed up, I know you still accept me and I accept you also because you put me in a world where Adam sinned and we sin too. We make mistakes too. We're failures too. We have to look at God and say, we have to turn to God and say, you know, God, you really messed us up. You really put us in that situation. I'm not going to hate you for it. I'm going to say, I love you because we're vulnerable and you I know that deep down we're your children and you care about us and you want us to be successful. You don't want us to fail. I'm going to accept you even though things are really tough. That's really what our response has to be. If we do that, then we'll learn from October 7th. We'll learn from Tisha B'Av. We'll learn from these from all the events that happened. We're able to respond in such a way that we're able to finally be successful. Because we're not looking at ourselves as robots who don't care about things and we just go on with our life. We take our situation to heart, our vulnerabilities to heart, our situation that we're in and say God is the only solution we have. If we look at God as the only solution, then he will solve our problems even though they look impossible. We'll stop here, and if you have any questions, we'll take them and we'll just thank you for coming.
Will this be posted online?
Oh, yeah.
Those people, this person managed to find their way to a path. This Jewish person was able to find in a place they didn't think that they thought they
would be. Beautiful, really amazing, exactly right. That's the whole 100th century, really, really nice, really nice people. Thank you. Any question? Easy, meaningful, rest of fast. I've got only good news.
Maybe, but it's in Yoda graph. Is that normal? It's not,
yeah.
It's, word order doesn't matter as much.